fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
I was going to say a marvelous Monday to all of you. Feels like a Monday, but it's Tuesday. We're all messed up because of Labor Day yesterday, but so happy to be with you for another great week on The Cale Clark Show. 1-888-914-9149 is the toll-free line to call to talk to me. 888-914-9149. Once again, you can also tweet at me at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Or you can try the show account too, at Cale Clark Show. And the email address is Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. If you want to get a hold of us, get some ideas for stuff to talk about on the show, questions you might have, fire them away. So I hope you guys had a great weekend. Hope you had a restful weekend and a good Labor Day. And we're kind of back to the grind now. We're pretty deep into September already, with it being, of course, what's today, Lucas, the 7th? I've already lost track. Today is, it's the 7th, September the 7th, and lots of cool stuff happening this week. Hey, I'm excited because the NFL starts this week. And on the show on Thursday, Rich Gannon, former NFL MVP, he's kind of our NFL correspondent, if you will, broadcasts the NFL on Sirius XM satellite radio. He's going to be joining us on Thursday with a little season preview, because the first game is Thursday night between the Bucks, the defending champs, Tampa Bay, and the Cowboys, America's team. You might disagree with that, but that's how they fancy themselves. But we've got lots of stuff to talk about between now and then as well. And a story that broke late last week, we're going to get to in just a second, that an Anglican bishop is leaving the Anglican communion. He's going to join the Catholic Church. That's pretty big news. And also, Shawn Mendes, one of the biggest stars in music. Producer Lucas was telling me that one of his songs on YouTube has over 2.2 billion, with a B, billion views. Unreal. And it's called Treat You Better. And he has recently appeared on a podcast in which he talked about how listening to Christian music actually really touched his heart. And he's kind of left atheism behind. So that's a fantastic story. We're going to get to that in just a bit. But first of all, as I said, late last week, news broke that the Anglican bishop of a place called Ebbsfleet, which I'd never heard of, his name is Jonathan Goodall, and he did a good thing. He has announced that he is going to step down from his office as a bishop on September the 8th, that's tomorrow, and he's going to enter full communion with the Catholic Church, and that is a momentous decision. He is 60 years old, and he's spent, obviously, all of his professional life in the Anglican Church. And so he, as far as I know, he hasn't given any interviews about this himself. Love to get him on the program. Maybe our crack staff can work on that. But there was a really, really good explainer of what he might be going through right now at this moment with The Pillar, which is a Catholic journalism outfit. And they interviewed another former Anglican who has become a Catholic priest. His name is Father James Bradley, and he's given a lot of insight about what it's like to be an Anglican, becoming a Catholic. By the way, if you're not familiar with the term Anglican, if you're in the United States, it's also known as the Episcopalian Church in the United States, but it's basically the Church of England. And this is what Jonathan Goodall, the soon-to-be ex-Anglican bishop of Ebbsfleet, announced when he told the world about his decision. He said that the Church of England had, quote, shaped and nourished his faith. Also, that he had made this decision together with his wife, and it was a way of saying yes to God's present call on his life, and not so much saying no to what he has known and experienced in the Church of England, to which he owes such a deep debt. That's what he said in his official statement. And so it's a little bit like there's another ex-Anglican who's now a Catholic priest, Father Dwight Longnecker, who is a parish in South Carolina, and he wrote a book a few years ago called More Christianity. You know, we've heard about C.S. Lewis, the famous Anglican who wrote Mere Christianity. He wrote a book in response called More Christianity, which is a great tongue-in-cheek little title there. And that's, I think, really what Goodall is saying here. He's not so much turning his back on what he's known before, but he's found out that there's more to the faith than what he had before. And he was, by the way, he was a traditionally minded Catholic, or not Catholic bishop, but Anglican bishop. And he was known as a flying bishop. A flying bishop. Why is that? Well, because his job was kind of to fly around to different Anglican parishes that were a little bit disaffected by the 1992, beginning in 1992, the Anglican Church. And I, by the way, I use the word church, small c for sure. It's not really a church, but let's say the Anglican Communion, that's probably a better term. But in the Anglican Communion, starting in 1992, they started ordaining women priests, and women bishops followed soon after that. And a lot of Anglicans had a huge problem with this. And so what John Goodall would do, would be flying around as an Anglican bishop, and he would be visiting these traditionally minded parishes and communities and kind of nourishing their faith and, doing all kinds of stuff with them. So he is, by the way, he is the fourth bishop from the Anglican Communion, from the Church of England, and the second bishop from his town to become Catholic since 2009. So this is a trend that we're seeing, and it really all goes back to that year, 2009, because in that year, Pope Benedict XVI promulgated a document called Anglicanorum Caelibus, and if my Latin pronunciation is off, you'll have to forgive me for that. And that came out in 2009, and basically what he did in that document, Pope Benedict created something called personal ordinariates for Anglicans who want to become Catholic. So essentially what this did was he set up a way for Anglicans to become Catholic, keep kind of a very similar liturgy to what they had in the Anglican communion, their own kind of culture. And really the thing that's different about it is that it's Catholic. It's under the Bishop of Rome, but they kind of still do their own thing. But they are united. They are Catholic. They're united to Rome. It's, so I guess in that sense, it's an analogy might be some of the Eastern rites of the Catholic Church, in which if you go to like an Eastern rite, like a Byzantine Catholic Mass or a Coptic Catholic Mass, Egyptian Catholic Mass, the liturgy looks a lot like an Orthodox Church of the East, but it's Catholic because they're united to Rome. So it's a different type of liturgy. So in a way, this is kind of like an Anglican rite that Pope Benedict created in 2009. So we don't know. Again, as far as I know, he hasn't, other than his initial statement that he released, Jonathan Goodall, the Anglican bishop, who will be received into the Catholic Church tomorrow, he hasn't tipped his hand either way, whether he's going to enter this Anglican ordinariate called Our Lady of Walsingham in England, or if he's going to try to become a Catholic priest. Because this is something that has been kind of the norm for Anglican bishops or priests who have entered the Catholic Church. A lot of them have gone on to become Catholic clergy, to become Catholic priests. A lot of them are married, and in fact, Jonathan Goodall is married. He has two children. I'm not sure how old they are. He's 60 years old himself, so they might be a little bit on the older side. But what happens in this case is that when these Anglican bishops and priests become Catholic, they can be ordained priests. They get dispensed from the normal obligation to celibacy in the Roman Rite. So he could become a married Catholic priest, possibly, but we really don't know what his plans are. Not everybody does that. Not everybody does that. But in fact, the current ordinary of the Ordinariate of Our Lady of Walsingham is Monsignor Keith Newton. He's kind of in charge of that body that is now Catholic in England, and he was also a former Anglican bishop. So again, the Pillar talked to Father James Bradley, who now teaches at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C., teaches canon law there. Now, he was a former deacon in the Church of England. He was on track to become an Anglican priest when this whole thing about becoming Catholic kind of hit. And this document came out from Pope Benedict in 2009. And he gives us some really needed context for what's going on with these guys. If you want to call in, if you have a take on this, 1-888-914-9149. One of the things that we're gonna see here is that Father Bradley will talk about the cost that he had. There was a huge social cost, a huge personal cost to his becoming Catholic. A lot of his former Anglican friends no longer speak with him. And that's par for the course. Going back to Cardinal Newman, when he became a Catholic, he talked a lot about many of his friends no longer, he lost a lot of things. He lost almost everything to become a Catholic, but he gained so much more. So here's a question for you if you want to call in 1-888-914-9149 on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. If you're a convert or even a revert like me to the Catholic faith, did you leave any friends or family members? Did you lose them in a sense? Do they no longer speak to you? Are you kind of persona non grata because of your Catholic faith, because you became Catholic, or maybe came back into the Catholic Church? Maybe you went into the Protestant world for a while like I did. Maybe you came back. Have you lost loved ones, friends, family members because of your choice? Is that part of the cost that you've had to pay to be Catholic? Call in 888-914-9149. That's the number to call toll free. So basically, Father Bradley again spoke with the pillar about kind of what he went through. And a lot of this really comes from the ecumenical movement. The ecumenical movement. And of course, the ecumenical movement is this idea that, well, it's not just an idea, this is a demand of Jesus himself, that all of us might be one. And he said this, of course, in John's Gospel. It's part of his high priestly prayer before Jesus went to his passion, before he went to the cross. He prayed for his followers that they all might be one, as you and I, Father, he said, are one, so that the world will know that you sent me. So this disunity among Christians is obviously a huge stumbling block for non-Christians. They're looking at us from the outside, saying these guys can't even get along with each other. They can't even agree on what the Christian faith is all about. So it is a bit of a scandal, a scandalon, a stumbling stone. And so obviously there has been, throughout the ages, this drive to kind of reunite all Christians. And especially after the Second Vatican Council, we talked a little bit about Vatican II last week on the show. Did it fail in its mission of trying to evangelize, wanting to re-evangelize the world, if you will? In Vatican II, there is a lot of discussion about how to reunite all Christians within the Catholic Church. Because again, this is the goal of the ecumenical movement. It's not just having a bunch of nice conversations, having a few conferences here and there, and producing some flowery dialogue, some language, some documents that come out. I remember one that came out a while back from the Lutheran Catholic Dialogue. So a lot of dialogue, a lot of discussion. That's all good, but Pope Benedict always reminded us that the goal of the ecumenical movement was corporate reunion, actual visible, physical unity in the church, in one body, the church founded by Christ. That's the goal of it. It's not just agreeing to disagree here and saying, oh, you know, we're really just looking at the same thing from different angles. That's not the case. That's not the case. And so, basically, this kind of fell apart when it came to the Anglicans, the hope of reunion. There was a lot of hope after Vatican II that the Anglicans and Catholics would reunite. But what happened in 1992 with the ordination of women and obviously, you know, changing views in the Anglican communion on homosexuality, ordaining of gay bishops and priests, that really helped to break down all of those conversations. And so, not to mention the fact that the Catholic Church has always said that Anglicans don't have valid holy orders to begin with. And as such, they don't have valid sacraments. So really that hope for sort of a large-scale reunion kind of faded into the background. And this is why Pope Benedict set up this idea of almost an Anglican rite within the Catholic Church, because we've got to do something. He basically said, you've got to do something. It's going to be, as Father James said in his interview with the Pillar, Father James Bradley, he said that Pope Benedict recognized that this idea of all Anglicans coming back to the Catholic Church after all this stuff happened was probably a pipe dream. It's not going to happen. I mean, obviously God can do anything. Miracles can take place. But he knew he had to do something. So this is why he set up this personal ordinariate, this way for Anglicans to become Catholic. And so, yeah, that's really the path that Father James Bradley took. And when in 2009, he was becoming an Anglican deacon, and he didn't actually become Catholic until 2011, it was 2 years later, because there wasn't a way for him to become Catholic, because Pope Benedict simply made this announcement that, hey, this is going to happen in 2009, but it actually, the structure didn't get set up until later. So this is why Father James Bradley became a deacon, an ordained deacon in the Church of England. It was really interesting how God worked in his life, because he started off as an Anglican deacon in a parish in a place called Kent, which is located in the Diocese of Rochester. And if you know anything about Catholic history, especially during the Reformation time, that was St. John Fisher's diocese, and he was one of the great Catholic martyrs of the English Revolution, when the Church of England broke away from the Catholic Church. And don't forget that when Martin Luther started the Protestant Revolution in the 16th century, King Henry VIII, before he did all the stuff with Anne Boleyn and, you know, rejected the Pope eventually, he was actually called a defender of the faith by the Pope, because he wrote all this stuff against Luther. So he was actually totally against the Protestant Revolution until he joined it himself for moral reasons, because the Church would not annul his valid marriage to Catherine of Aragon so he could marry Anne Boleyn. So, as is often the case when it comes to morality, that's really the sticking point for people not wanting to become Catholic. It's not necessarily the Catholic theology that really gets them. It's Catholic teaching on morals, not the faith stuff, but moral stuff. But anyways, so St. John Fisher was also a great figure of the resistance, the Catholic resistance in England. And just like Thomas More, he was also martyred. So what was really cool was that when this Anglican ordinariate was finally set up, this Anglican right within the Catholic Church, this deacon, this Anglican deacon who is now a Catholic priest, Father James Bradley, he came into the Catholic Church along with 40 of his parishioners. So this is kind of cool about this Anglican rite, that in fact, entire parishes have become Catholic together. Now, it's going to be extremely difficult to get the entire Anglican communion to do this, but parishes, individuals, groups of people, they have often come into the Catholic Church since this thing got set up. And that was really the whole point of Pope Benedict doing this. He wanted to do something. And what's really cool is that Father James Bradley, when he did become Catholic, his parents and his sister also decided to do that. And that made their family life a lot easier. So he did lose a lot of friends. He did lose a lot of other people in his life that weren't happy about his decision, but at least his close family converted along with him. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. I'm going to go to the phones right now, because one of the questions that I wanted to ask you about was, has this happened to you? Did you convert to the Catholic Church? Did you come back to the Catholic Church after a period away? And did people not like that? Did some of your friends and family kind of reject you for doing that? So we're going to go to Rita right now in Carmichael, California. Hi, Rita.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going, Rita?
Pretty good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. What's your take on this whole situation?
Well, I raised my kids Catholic. I had a daughter and a son. And they grew up, they both married Catholics, and each of them have two kids. Mm-hmm. The kids are all teenagers now. The oldest is actually 22, and the youngest is 15. Only one of my grandchildren, the first one, the oldest one, was baptized. Now, these kids all went through Catholic school, including their spouses.
Oh.
And they have all left the church. They have, my daughter had her first daughter baptized, and then nothing after that. Mm. I actually, couldn't condemn them or anything throughout that time, too, because a lot of that time I had left the church also. After they finished school and everything, I was a single mom, so... Mm-hmm. I just continued to live my life, but I did start listening to the radio, to Relevant Radio,
uh-huh.
with Immaculate Heart for a while here in the Sacramento area. And that's what brought me back to the church. And I moved into a new apartment that was just a block away from the church. And so I started going there. It was really hard at first because I don't have any family. I'm alone. So, it was hard to get to feel like that was my family again or anything, you know. But I kept going, and I found that there were other people here in the apartment complex where I live. It's a senior community. Also go there. So I became friends with them. We had something in common, and it was our church. Wow. Anyway, I've lived here 9 years now, so over the last 9 years, I have become pretty involved with the church. I love it. I have, especially this last couple of years, I've been through so many things. I've had cancer and several surgeries, all kinds of things going on. But I've also, my kids, now that their children are grown or old enough to take care of themselves and stay home alone, they don't need me anymore, and I don't hear from them. They're just not interested. They're all very well off. My daughter she's a stay-at-home mom, and her husband works mostly at home, from home. He did this even before the pandemic. And she lives about 20 miles one way, and my son is 20 miles the other way, or 10, not even, I would say 10 miles maybe. He has a job where now he's working from home also, and his wife is a nurse, so they're well off. They've both got nice homes. My daughter one time, a few years ago, told me that they'd been going to some different churches and, you know, trying to find something. And I just looked at her. I couldn't believe what she was saying. And I don't dare say anything, but what I do is I send them cards on their birthdays and holidays, and let them know that there's being a mass said for them.
I think that's a good. That's a really good thing to do. You can send them little things, and you can maybe send them links to relevant radio episodes. and I think it's awesome, Rita, that relevant radio brought you back in a lot of ways. And of course there was that merger some years ago between Immaculate Heart Radio, which you were listening to at the time, and Relevant Radio. So it's all Relevant Radio now. And that's really great to hear that Relevant Radio is making a difference. We know that that's true. And I'm happy that it made a difference in your life. And I'm just going to ask everybody to pray for those kids. And they're obviously aware a little bit of their need for God. They're looking for it elsewhere in some other religious communities, but obviously they can only find the fullness of the faith in the Catholic Church. And that's what Bishop Jonathan Goodall, an Anglican bishop who's becoming Catholic tomorrow officially, that's what he found out as well. So we're going to have more on this. And also the surprising testimony of Shawn Mendes, the great musician who is leaving atheism behind. All that and more next on The Cale Clark Show. Stay with us. I know I can treat you better than he can. Yeah. And any girl like you deserve. I can treat you better too. It's the Cale Clark Show, 1-888-914-9149. Treat you better than some of those other hosts. I'll take your calls. 1-888-914-9149. I'm only kidding. And those are, of course, the musical stylings of Shawn Mendes, my fellow Canadian, who is saying that he's left atheism behind after being touched by God through music. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. But speaking of Canadians, Lucas, you a tennis fan?
You know, I can't say. Sometimes it depends.
Okay, I know Patrick Alog, who's taking your calls today, 888-914-9149. He's a big tennis fan, and he's pretty pumped. He was texting me because Leila Fernandez, who is Canadian, she just turned 19. She's pulled off a couple of huge upsets at the U.S. Open, including beating the great Naomi Osaka a couple days ago. And now she won again today, and she is now into the semifinals of the U.S. Open. Unbelievable. Won in a thriller. Three-set thriller tiebreaker, and another Canadian is going tonight. Félix Auger-Aliassime playing in the quarters for the men's. I'm really into the U.S. Open this year. Bianca lost last night, though. Bianca Andreescu, she the North. She won it in 2019, beat Serena. She's out. But that's okay. Still a couple Canadians left, and unfortunately no American players are left. They're all out of the tournament. That's too bad, but the future of American tennis looks bright. But enough tennis talk. I want to hit the ball back to you, as it were. So we're going to go back to the phones now. Katie is calling from San Diego. Hey, Katie.
Hi,
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for calling in. I love San Diego. Oh, it's one of my favorite cities in the world.
It used to be mine, too. But the world's gone mad, so. things are not going so hot here. I mean, it's not Chicago yet, but we have a new mayor that nobody seemed to have voted in. Funny how that happens in our country.
So, I'll have to yeah, read up on that. But I'm sure you didn't call in to talk about the mayoral race in San Diego. So what are you thinking of?
I love your radio station, and I downloaded your app, and I often listen. And
cool.
I started to in 2018. Mm-hmm. I think I just found Relevant Radio just cruising by accident, you know, through up and down the dial. And it was a time in my life where, after a long marriage, my husband wanted a divorce. It wasn't like this was symptomless, you know.
Okay.
You can usually tell when your marriage is going sour. But I'm not a Catholic, and I've gone to church all my life. My mother was a Catholic, and when she married my father, she actually went and became Protestant.
Okay. Okay.
Like my father was. Does Reformed church, but I've gone for a long time to a non-denominational church. So I don't know. I think that lots of times there's a happy medium in things. A lot of Christian scripture-based churches that are not just dead, but consider themselves live and truly do take Jesus as their savior. A lot of them are so California style, you know, surfer loosey-goosey. There's no liturgy. And sometimes some of us are searching for a little more. You know why? Because there's a reverence. Okay, we shouldn't feel fearful of God. That's true, and you don't want to scare people, so that's why the surfer movement type of people move away from all that, you know, and the priests and the robes. But then there's a form of respect, and that seems to be very much lost in society, whether it's Christian or atheistic. It just seems to have gone out the door, and we're not better for it, you know. And I love your programs. I love Go Ask Your Father. I mean, I just look forward to that. And so many others, you know, and young Kim Marie, she's got a good head on her shoulders for younger people listening. But I did find that lots of times when I do tell, not very judgy here in California in this way, but when people, well, you were saying about the opposite, do people make you like a non-person, like, oh, you're Catholic. And the Protestant church I go to is very open. They would never treat anyone that way. You would be welcome no matter what. But I found that lots of times if I say I'm not Catholic to my Catholic friends, and they do know, you know, if we discuss God, I get the snub, I'm not in the club. And then I can't help but, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, that's terrible. Like, if your Catholic friends are kind of snubbing you for not being Catholic, that's ridiculous. They should be inviting you to become Catholic. They should be inviting you to check things out, just as a lot of these, as you mentioned, these Protestant megachurches and other groups in the Protestant world are very evangelistic. They're very open. They certainly are trying to make converts and get people connected with Christ. A lot of times they don't understand that Christ founded the Catholic Church and he wants everybody to be in it. And this is really for everybody. That's what the word Catholic means. It means universal. It's for all people at all times and all places. And it's funny that you mentioned, and I'm very familiar with this as well, Katie, because you mentioned a couple things. You mentioned the Reformed background, that your parents kind of had that, were in that movement within the Protestant world. And I had a stint in the Reformed church, a Dutch Reformed church. Not that that's my background, but long story short, I when I was in a Protestant seminary, I started working in a Reformed congregation as an assistant pastor, but I also had a lot of experience with a lot of the non-denominational churches, the sort of just independent churches that have a unique liturgy, which are kind of just making up in a lot of ways. I guess I shouldn't say they're making it up, but that was one thing that got me really thinking about the church indirectly during my Protestant years, Katie. I was asked to come up with a liturgy for young adults. This was part of my ministry. I was working with young adults, and I was supposed to create a worship service for them. So I started thinking about what is the liturgy? What is it supposed to be like? And what did the early Christians, what did they do in their worship? And so when I started looking into that, I realized that, you know what? Worship kind of always had a structure back in the beginning. And St. Justin Martyr talks about this about 150 AD in his first apology. He writes to the Roman emperor and he explains what Christians do and how they worship, that because there were a lot of misunderstandings about Christians. They were thought to be cannibals. And that was because of the Eucharist, because it was said that they ate the flesh and drank the blood of this guy. And obviously it was our Lord, but it was the Eucharist. Unbloody, sacramentally, Jesus gives us his body, blood, soul, and divinity. So I started looking at the writings of St. Justin Martyr. When you read those, Katie, he's got the Mass all laid out, and it's exactly the same Mass that we have today in the Catholic Church. And so I started thinking about that. Wow, that's pretty impressive. And so I would definitely encourage you to keep studying and keep looking into that, because the Bible is a Catholic book. You mentioned the Bible as well. I know you know a lot of scripture and you study that. Well, the Bible was kind of collated and put together by the Catholic Church. And so there's really nothing in the scriptures that contradicts the Catholic faith and vice versa. So I just encourage you to keep on that journey, to keep looking into things and keep asking questions, because I think it's great. I think it's awesome that you listen to Relevant Radio, and it's really cool that you called in.
And I don't ever judge anybody, even my friends, you know, like you don't understand kind of thing. I still love them anyway, and it doesn't stop me from being friends. It just makes me a little sad. But, you know, I mean, I know people, like you said, Catholics have felt snubbed by Protestants. Now my mother, now not everybody doesn't believe in, I believe in the absolute of the Eucharist. I really do think that, I think we call that transubstantiation. Mm-hmm. And so it's not every Protestant that thinks it's just in memory only of, you know, cracker or wafer and wine or grape juice. But here, there are some of us that do.
Yeah, that's true. There are a lot of Protestants, Katie, that do think that the Eucharist is more than, that even their version of communion is more than just a symbol, that there is somehow a presence there. But even if they do think that, and this is often the case in the Anglican, I was talking earlier about an Anglican bishop who's becoming Catholic. A lot of times Anglicans will say, well, we have a real Eucharist. They actually do believe in a real presence. But even if they think that the Eucharist, that their Eucharist is Jesus Christ, it can't become Jesus Christ, because the power to do that comes from valid holy orders, and they don't have validly ordained bishops and priests in the Anglican communion, and therefore they can't have. So I can say, for example, I'm not a priest. I can say the same words that we hear at Mass. This is my body, this is my blood, but I can't make the bread and the wine become the body and blood of Christ, because I don't have holy orders. I don't have that, the power to confect the sacrament, which only comes from the line of apostolic succession, from Christ to the apostles, from the apostles to the bishops, from the bishops to the priest, all throughout history. And so that's necessary for there to be a real Eucharist, Katie. That's something you should know.
Where would I find that to read that history? Because from the apostles to bishops, because I've read, and then nowhere in the New Testament have I ever seen apostles to bishops.
Well, actually,
I would love to read that.
Yeah, well, one thing you could do is look at the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and you can find that online. You can find that online for free. You don't have to go out and buy it, although I think it's a good investment because it's got a lot of great stuff in it. And I've known a lot of Protestants that, even if they're not Catholic, they get a lot out of the Catechism of the Catholic Church, because it's just a great, there's so much richness there, and it's all based on Scripture and also through the sacred tradition of the Church as well. But there's a section in there on ordination, kind of where it comes from, what it's all about. But in the New Testament, it does talk about this. It does talk about this. St. Paul talks about, hey, what you've learned from me, entrust to faithful men who can then teach others. Also, he talks about bishops. He talks about deacons. Those words are mentioned in the New Testament. And in the writings of the early church, you see that there is a more concrete explanation of Jesus realizing, of course, Jesus, pretty smart guy, you know, Son of God. He knows that there's going to be strife for who's going to be leading the church in the second generation. He can foresee that as God the Son. And so he provided for a way for people to know who their leaders were, who the right leaders were, because there were lots of other groups, even in the early church, who were kind of like Protestants, even in the first century, second century, who broke off from the church that Jesus founded, started their own movements. And so, no, we've got the right way. We've got the right way to follow Jesus. Well, how did you know if you were in the church founded by Jesus? Well, because all Catholic churches, and that's what they really came up with the name Catholic because of this. The word Catholic was first kind of popped up that we know of in about the year 107 AD in the writings of St. Ignatius of Antioch, who was an early bishop and martyr. And he was the third bishop in line from Peter in Antioch. Peter, in the Bible tells us, went to Antioch and then eventually went to Rome. Mm-hmm. And Ignatius of Antioch uses this phrase, the Catholic Church, in his letters. And he doesn't really explain it. So everybody who's writing to, they know what he's talking about. And they had to come up with this word to describe the church Jesus founded, because, again, there are all these other groups out there. So if you belong to the Catholic Church, your bishop could trace their ordination back to one of the original 12 apostles. And they had that kind of locked down. They had that documented in the various churches, like in Ephesus, in Rome, in all the cities that the church kind of got going in. And so, yeah, I would say look into that. Look into that a little bit.
I will. I'm glad you said that, because we were just going over Antioch and through the book of Ephesians. Mm-hmm. I have read many of the New Testament books where Paul talks about the deacons, and he starts to give about, you know, the order of how things should be. But never did I realize that or interpret reading that anywhere, that deacons were actually going to be a bishop. I thought they were way below a priest. So at least in the way Paul described it in some of the books of the New Testament. So I'd love to read the whole complete story through the catechism. That would be actually fantastic. And I think right now, since the world has been so ugly, a lot of people, I'm sure I'm not alone, are really searching for the truth, the real truth, you know? And even though, like you were saying about the evangelicals, I often feel like when churches get too big, they're like a movie theater and you go and you sit. And I really feel for many years now, I want to be part of a family. Maybe it is the Mickey Mouse Club. I don't know. I hope not. But I hope it's bigger than that. But I want to be part of that family and not just go and sit. Because when you're unaccountable and it's so big that the church, most people don't get to know each other, I feel like there's also something lost, and that's where the wheat gets sown with the tares, you know, that parable
about
people that go, because anonymity is like allows you to be a sinner, and you're hearing enough to just get tickle your ears and get vaccinated, so to speak, from true Christianity. And I've been very, very pleased. I'm a registered nurse for a long time, and if I may just say, and I'm not trying to cause any kind of stir, I am not in favor of this vaccine. I heard Patrick Madrid tried to help somebody, and she was calling, and I felt real sad because I love everybody on Relevant Radio. I really do. I feel like your family coming to the speakers.
Well,
but just
great.
Me, my opinion as a resident.
Well, Katie, I'm going to jump in there. We have to take a quick break, but I'm so glad that you called in, Katie, and I really appreciate your call, and I certainly hope you continue your investigation of the Catholic Church. And yeah, even in the Catholic Church, we have to be intentional about forming community, and you can be anonymous in the Catholic Church, so you're going to have to kind of find a little group within the church, maybe a Bible study group or something else to connect to, some other people. But I do hope that you continue that investigation. Keep listening to Relevant Radio. Hope you guys do as well. Everybody listening, we'll be right back after this quick break on the Cale Clark Show. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
You watch me bleed until I can't breathe.
All right, a little more Shawn Mendes there. Apparently Lucas is not a fan of Shawn Mendes. Conflicts with his support for Justin Bieber, apparently. So, anyways... Sorry to out you on that one.
Well, you know, I'm not a huge fan of his music, but I got to say, I have a little bit more, I got respect for him after this cool interview that you shared with me, which I feel like you're going to talk about now.
Yeah, so. we're going to talk about it in just a second. We're going to go quickly now to Craig on the phone in Monterey Park, California. He wants to kind of react to our previous caller, Katie in San Diego. Hey, Craig.
Hello. I just wanted to say that whenever the issue of apostolic succession comes up, Catholics should immediately go to Acts chapter 1, verse 20.
Yeah, that's a great place. That's a great place. And thanks for mentioning that, Craig. And Craig obviously is calling in reference to a conversation we had just before the break with Katie from San Diego, who's not a Catholic, but she listens to Relevant Radio a lot, and she's thinking about maybe becoming a Catholic. And I encouraged her to do so. And we were talking a little bit about apostolic succession. And I encourage you to check the Catechism, but also on Scripture, it is there. It is there. Obviously, Acts chapter 1, verses 20 to 26, Craig just mentioned that. And this is, of course, after Jesus' ascension. What happens? Judas has left a spot open among the 12. You can't just have 11 because the 12 obviously means, hey, there's a new Israel here. The church is the new Israel, so he has to be replaced. And, of course, he is replaced with the election of Mattathias. And so we can also look at, obviously, the pastoral letters of St. Paul, just really, really quickly. I want to mention 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 6, chapter 4, verse 14. And that's Paul talking to Timothy, and he laid his hands on Timothy. Timothy was ordained as a bishop, if you will, even in that first generation. So this is not something that is a much later invention of the Catholic Church. St. Paul talks in the letter in 1 Timothy later on about, hey, don't be hasty in laying on hands on other guys. You need to examine these people and make sure that good candidates are ordained to be bishops. And of course, really, the only reason why we have priests is because bishops can't be everywhere at once. And so bishops share some of their powers with priests. But the fullness of holy orders, obviously, is in being a bishop. So anyways, and this, it's all over the writings of the church fathers. If you read the first generation, the second generation, it's unanimous. They all believe in the apostolic succession of bishops, and only a validly ordained bishop can ordain priests. And so this is nobody dissents from this in the early church writings. So it's the early church fathers, as one writer said, are the most dangerous men in all of Christianity, because when you read them, you see Catholic practices spelled out very, very clearly. And you see it in the New Testament as well, but it's really explicit in the writings of the fathers, because very often they're trying to explain the faith to people who have no idea what's going on. Whereas in the New Testament, they're all already part of the church. Most of the New Testament documents, if not all of them, are written to people who are already in the church. So a lot of this stuff doesn't really get explained as much as we might like. But the early fathers, the apostolic fathers of the church that come after the death of the apostles, the second, third generation, they do spell things out a little bit more for us. So one of the things that I wanted to mention with respect to the story that we had off the top, Jonathan Goodall, the Anglican bishop who's becoming Catholic, coming into full communion with the church tomorrow, so please pray for him and his family. The Pillar interviewed another convert from Anglicanism, Father James Bradley, who teaches at the Catholic University of America. And one of the things that he said was that, you know, looking back on his life after becoming Catholic, he started realizing that there were things that happened to him, places where he went, churches that he visited, experiences that he had as a musician, seeing cathedrals and all those kinds of things, kind of prepared the ground for him, kind of tilled the ground for him to eventually make it fertile so that he might one day become a Catholic and eventually even a Catholic priest. And one of the things he said was this. He said, quote, "I think we often take grace for granted because it's so super abundant. We experience it all the time in such wonderful ways. But when you have an opportunity to stop and look back and see what the Lord has done, it's in those moments that you realize the effect and the importance of that grace." And so little things in life. And he mentions being a musician in the past. Another musician who is pretty successful at it is Shawn Mendes, and he's one of the world's, you know, most successful pop artists. And he really comes from a background of atheism. But in a recent podcast interview, he talked about how listening to Christian music kind of touched his heart in an interesting way. Listen to this clip.
There's something so interesting because I grew up kind of more or less atheist, and now becoming much more spiritual and really being sure there's a God or sure there's a higher thing and there's the universe or whatever you like to call it. Music was the thing that did that for me. Watching Maverick City Choir, I think they're called Maverick City Choir, singing about God, singing about Jesus. I'm sitting there watching this YouTube video and they're singing about Jesus, and I just start crying my eyes out. And I'm like, you know when you're crying and it's like, this is like something leaving me?
Yeah.
This is like that type of cry. It's like, you know, And I'm like, how is something that my whole life I've grown up to believe is fanatic and not science and not the truth feel like home because of this song?
Wow. So to me, that's a moment of grace, God's grace touching his heart. And he said, well, it felt like home. It felt like home. And by the way, he, as he mentioned in the interview, he was listening to a band called, it's not really a band, it's more of a movement in the Christian music world called Maverick City Music. And they've released a few gospel albums, some contemporary Christian music type stuff. It's funny because a really good friend of mine, he was actually the best man at my wedding, he runs the website for Maverick City Music. So the first thing I did after I saw that clip was I called him and I said, did you hear about this? He's like, of course I've heard about this. And so, yeah, Maverick City Music was something that Shawn Mendes found on YouTube. Hey, these guys are just like everybody else. They're just discovering things. They're kind of surfing the net. And somewhat randomly, he finds this Maverick City Music video, starts watching it. The lyrics touch his heart, and he seems to, and again, I'd make no comments on where he's at faith-wise. He needs to obviously discover the Catholic Church. We need to pray for this guy. The faith isn't true if Shawn Mendes becomes a Christian or Catholic. It's true independently of that, but these guys all have eternal souls as well, and sometimes we forget that. And so, Shawn Mendes, interesting interview that he gave on a podcast recently talking about how this really touched his heart. We're going to go to the phones now. Dee Dee is calling from Phoenix. Hey, Dee Dee.
Yes, Mr. Clark. Ironically, I just recently finished reading John Henry Newman's Apologia Pro Vita Sua. And the reverse happened to me. I was a fallen away Catholic for 20 years, and it was a Baptist deacon that introduced me to the King James Version of the Bible. And that brought me back to my faith.
That's interesting.
And we had a falling out, believe it or not, over the sacrament of reconciliation. Huh. I remembered as a child, my parents always encouraged me to go to confession. Of course, the Catholic Church has changed the name from confession in the old days. Now it's reconciliation. But it's still the same thing.
It's the same thing. Yeah.
You bring your sins to Jesus, and you get absolution from a priest. So anyway, to make a long story short, the good news is that I'm studying to get a catechist certificate to teach the good news, Catholic good news, to children.
That's awesome. That's amazing, Dee Dee. We need more of that. We need more of that. We need more catechists out there. We need people to explain and defend the faith. And yeah, it seems like God used an interesting road, a circuitous route, as it were, to bring you back.
A Baptist, of all people.
Yeah, and God can use anything, obviously. And so also, I think in some ways, and I've mentioned this before, and this goes back to Katie's call, a lot of Protestant groups, all they really have is the scriptures. They don't have valid sacraments except for baptism and marriage in almost every case. And so what they're doing with so little is in some ways a rebuke to us as Catholics, because the evangelization that they're doing, the study of scripture, that's something that we can emulate, and we should be doing that. And so now that you're back, I think it's great that you're working on this and going to catechize children, because obviously what we need is a great foundation in the faith for the young so that they don't walk away in the first place. And that's really what happened.
Praise the Lord, Mr. Clark.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what happened to me and countless other people as well. I wasn't very well catechized growing up, and I might have left the church anyways, who knows, but I really wasn't very well grounded in the reasons why I'm Catholic. And I think if you are pretty well grounded in at least a rudimentary apologetic, and you know that there's a credible case for Catholicism, that there's an intellectual basis, there's a historical basis, there's a great tradition of thought behind Catholicism. And these are real events that happened in history with the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ and his founding the church. Kids are going to, you know, be tempted to walk away as they grow up, and they're going to have a lot of temptations and pressures in life. But if they know that there's a good foundation, hopefully they'll reconsider and come back. Hopefully they'll never leave in the first place. But all we can do is give people the tools. And hey, they're free creatures. They're human freedom. We have to trust God and pray a lot. Pray a lot for them, for our kids and everybody that we know.
Yes.
So that's great. Well, God bless you as you're doing that, Dee Dee, and thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you.
That was great. Bye-bye. You got it, Dee Dee. That was Dee Dee calling from Phoenix. So, what'd you think of that little clip, Lucas, Shawn Mendes?
I love it. And it music does have such a powerful influence on us, and it can go the opposite direction as well, if you take in bad music. But talking about evangelization and stuff, sometimes music can get through to a person more so than logical arguments can.
Yep.
So I certainly know that for me, I'm a very emotive person. So, hey, maybe if you know somebody and you're like, I want to share the faith, but they might not be that receptive to it, share a cool song with them, Maybe it'll touch
their
heart.
If they're an emo, because our guard is down when we're listening to music. Our defenses are down. We can be touched by God. And hopefully you've been touched at least at some level by the show. Lucas Holt produced. Patrick Alog took your phone calls. Timmy's up next. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.